thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really pleased to be here to talk to you about these topics today. And what I'm going to talk to you about is biochar standards and certification programs. A little bit about me. I'm a consultant in biochar. I'm also a writer, and I'm an editor at a new journal called the Biochar Journal that we have just launched. And we're covering biochar science and application, so it's a journalistic sort of journal, not an academic journal, but we hope you will check it out at the URL there. And another thing you might want to know about me is that I was involved in the process of drafting the first IB version of 1.0 of the IBI standards, and it was a really interesting process. It was open, transparent, public, involved lots and lots of people, including many of you in this room. So this is what I'm going to cover today. I'm going to talk about, first of all, why do we want standards and certification for biochar? A little bit about what the existing standards are, what they cover. And then I'm going to ask, are these certification programs effective? Are they working? And then specifically, what could we do better after that if they're working or not? How can we make them better? How could we add, for instance, biochar qualities that markets are most interested in? And then in contrast, what are the biochar qualities that researchers are currently investigating? And is there an intersection between those investigations and what the markets want? And then finally, I'll suggest some new biochar quality assays that we might want to work on developing. So why? Why go through this process of standards and certification? Well, one of the first reasons I heard a lot about was to standardize characterization for research purposes, because there's such a variety of materials out there, we often don't know what we're talking about when we read these research papers. So that's a really important reason to have standards. And then the second reason is for the industry to keep unacceptable, bad, toxic biochar products out of markets through testing and certification. That's really important to have a viable industry. And then finally, and this is looking towards the future a little bit, to actually assist in market development by providing the ability to match products to applications. There are two biochar certification programs up and running now, the IBI International Biochar Initiative Program and the EBC, the European Biochar Certificate, and they were both initiated in 2012. I'm going to do a little compare and contrast here between them. So beginning with the biochar definition, I think we see a big difference in the approach here between these two. And I call it a product-only versus a product-plus-process approach. So the IBI biochar definition is purely a material standard, and it's basically the definition of charcoal, and which you can see that under the EBC definition, I think you can read that, biochar is defined as a charcoal-like substance. However, the EBC definition of biochar includes sustainability standards or indicators for the biomass, and also includes the end use of it, that it not result in the return of the carbon back to the atmosphere as CO2. The other big difference between these two standards is the carbon content, and what's a minimum carbon content for materials that can be called biochar. So the IBI has a minimum carbon content of 10%, and then they grade biochar materials in three grades based on the amount of carbon in them. The EBC has a different threshold. It sets the threshold at 50% carbon to be considered biochar. However, it also recognizes another category of materials that it calls biocarbon minerals that could be, have more ash in it and less than 50% carbon. Getting into a little bit more of the details here of these two different standards, you can see that both IBI and EBC have feedstock restrictions. Feedstocks must be clean biomass. It must be biomass, and it must be free of any hazardous materials or significant contamination. However, only the EBC states that the feedstocks must be sustainably produced. IBI doesn't really say anything about that. And only the EBC has actually certifies the pyrolysis process for energy efficiency and emissions, and actually requires a facility inspection of the pyrolysis facility. In terms of toxicant analysis, this is where a lot of work and effort has gone into toxicant analysis, and it's pretty similar between the two standards. They both look at both the thermally produced toxicants, PAH and dioxins, and they also both look at the ones that could come from feedstocks, and those would be primarily heavy metals. Then the Biochar stable carbon content for carbon accounting, I think they're identical at this point in the methodologies they use for that. And then the biochar properties, there's a whole list of different properties that can be measured for biochar, including things like pH and bulk density, moisture, and surface area. And both of these standards measure a lot of different properties, but they're not exactly the same, and not all the methods are exactly the same, but they're fairly similar. And then the division of these properties into basic or required, both of them have kind of different sets of what's basic and what's required and what might be an optional test. And then, as I said before, the IBI has three biochar grades based on carbon content, whereas the EBC has grades, but they're based on threshold levels of PAH in metals, so they have a basic grade and a premium grade that's cleaner than the basic grade. So let's take a look now at these have existed now for a little bit, and let's take a look at how successful they are. And going back to the three objectives for standards, the first one is to have a standardized basic biochar material. And has that been achieved? And I would say yes. I think that these product standards have established basic biochar qualities. And furthermore, there are efforts underway to harmonize the thresholds and testing methods between the two standards. And hopefully this standardization is serving the biochar research community, but perhaps there might even be a need for new tests to even assist with more meaningful biochar characterization. Now, the second objective for standards is to keep undesirable materials out of the markets. Have these programs been successful? Well, really, it's completely unknown. There are no monitoring programs. And I would say that these programs have had low market penetration. However, it's good to remember that they're still very new. Here, these are all voluntary programs. That's important to remember. So looking at the IBI, it now has three certified products in the U.S. Cost is fairly costly to certify a biochar product. And there's no regulatory incentive in the U.S. Nobody's asking a biochar producer to get IBI certification. And furthermore, there are other certifications such as organic material certification that producers are probably find a priority and have more meaning in the markets than IBI certification. In the EU, it's also costly. There are a few more products certified, however, and this is probably because the regulatory environment there is more stringent, and so it justifies the cost. Here are some of these other certifications that in the US that biochar producers can get for their materials. The OMRI Organic Use Certification, it's not that difficult to get because OMRI views biochar as a form of ash, which is a traditional soil amendment. So it's not that difficult. And there are other certifications. There are even kosher biochars on the market. And here's another reason that I think that we have had slow adoption of these biochar standards and certification programs in the U.S., and that's because quite sizable portion of the biochar now on the market in the U.S. is a waste product. It's high carbon ash from biomass energy combustion plants. And a lot of times it's more than 50% carbon, and it would meet all the criteria for being a biochar material under the IBI standards. However, it can be very difficult to certify. And a lot of this has to do with chain of custody, but there are also questions about the consistency of the product because it's not manufactured to be biochar, it's a waste product. And so in the absence of other controls, the recent revision of the IBI standards is now requiring quarterly testing of these products to be certified. Nevertheless, despite the fact that there are questions about the quality, these biomass energy boilers are producing agronomically valuable chars that are now on the market. And as far as the agronomical value of them, I would refer you to a session at last year's USBI conference on wood ash industries that was organized by Tom Miles. And there are some interesting presentations to look at there where you see that this material is in use, and not only that, there's a lot of it that is available. So I want to ask, is there another way that we could get this product on the market and have it be certified, know that it's a quality product? And so going back to the division that I spoke of before between process versus product, could we take a process approach that might provide a more effective and more affordable quality assurance framework than just frequently testing the products that come out of these plants? And so to give us an idea of how that might work, I want to refer you to the biochar quality mandate, which tried to set up a framework like this for dioxins. And the biochar quality mandate is from the UK. It's intended for UK implementation. It's just a discussion draft at this point. I think it's been out for about a year. But it's got a lot of interesting material in it because it looks at the whole entire biochar system from soup to nuts, and includes life cycle analysis, carbon accounting, and it's conceptual, but it has some very good ideas in it, I think. And one of the ideas they have is to certify the feedstocks that go into the process, because if you have feedstocks that don't have chlorine and don't have heavy metals, it's very unlikely you're going to be able to make any dioxins. So that's one example. And so they ask the question, is this idea of exempting biochars from testing going to be acceptable to regulators, and then how will you do it? How will you verify that feedstocks are clean? So that's one approach. And here's a flow chart that I put together that just kind of contrasts, again, the product versus the process approach. And the product approach involves taking batches of product and testing them for all these things and just continually doing that, whereas the process approach would separate the process into the different stages and test things at different stages, maybe more effectively, maybe cheaper. So, you could start with the feedstocks and test for problem elements. Then you could look at the thermochemical conversion process. And, the bioenergy plants, biomass boilers in the U.S. are already regulated by the EPA, which requires that they kind of tune up their process and verify that they're operating cleanly. And so could there be some connection between the EPA boiler tune-up rules and, clean processes and what comes out of them in the char? I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's worth investigating. And then finally, when you do actually get to the point of testing products for things, maybe it's better to test the biochar after it's already blended, because most of the biochar on the markets, retail markets today, are blended with compost or fertilizers or other materials. So again, revisiting our objectives here, I think we've been successful in standardizing basic characteristics for research purposes. I think we have no idea whether we're keeping unacceptable biochar products out of the market. And then the last objective, to assist in market development, I'd have to say I don't think we're there yet. So I'm going to the last part of this presentation is about that topic. And so the big question is, what do markets want? Here are all these biochar products. Are they meeting the needs? The real question, I think, is really, what are markets being told? Because people don't really know what biochar is. So they're hearing what the biochar producers are telling them. So I went and did a quick online survey of retail product labels, biochar, just to find the things that are made, the claims that are being made. And I organized these from easy to hard to certify, and I didn't include the ones that are completely uncertifiable. So this is just things that might possibly, you might be able to certify them. So pH, obviously, is easy. Sorption properties, we have lots of methods for testing sorption properties, surface area, and activity. Sustainability is something that's actually very valued in the market. It's not a product characteristic, it's a process characteristic. And there are methodologies for getting sustainable certification, so that can be done. Climate benefits as well. We do have methodologies now for stable carbon that I think everyone agrees on for biochar. It's this last bunch, assurance of agronomic effectiveness, which is what everyone really wants to know. But can you actually certify it? So those four things there on the bottom, here they are again. These are things that I think possibly we might be able to certify. Beginning, and number one, I think, is the most important one to work on, because there's a great interest in soil-water relations and what biochar could do for those. especially sitting here in California and hearing all about the drought. You know, this is a huge, huge issue. These other things, maybe less fertilizer use, I don't know. Maybe they're possible. So again, going back to the biochar quality mandate, this is from one of the tables there. They've listed some new proposed tests. So that tells me that there are other people thinking about these things too. And so especially these two tests that I've certified, soil water potential, there's a method there, and impact on soil aggregation, because what all the researchers are telling me is that soil physical properties are a really important factor in water holding capacity. So we probably have to look at both of these to come up with some sort of assay or test for biochar impact on soil water. So then I thought, well, you know, how are we doing on this? Are people working on this? This is just a quick and dirty characterization I made sitting down, looking through the IBI research bibliography at only papers from 2014, and reading abstracts and titles and just quickly, you know, making a tally. What category do you fall into as your major topic of this paper? And 428 papers. There's a lot of papers, and that was in early October. I think there have been 100 more since then. So there's a lot of papers to look at. But what I could see is that the ones that would actually address soil water impacts or physical chemical changes in soil are not so many. I don't know if it's enough work to really get the job done or not. But I think that this is a place where we might want to look for new tests that could really really verify the properties of biochar that might be of most interest to markets. So finally, here are some of the papers that when I did my speed reading of those abstracts that kind of jumped out at me as ones that I'm going to put on my reading list that might start to help address this issue. And with that, I would just thank you, and I'll leave you with the recipe from Justus Liebig for Poudrette, which was a 19th century fertilizer made from human waste and charcoal, and as you can see, it includes a lot of our favorite ingredients. Thank you very much.
Kelsey did a nice job of sewing the certification, and I like that last one about the number of papers, because Kurt and I were talking, we're usually the recipients of having to review most of those papers, so it's good to see that it's acknowledged. But do we have any questions on Kelsey's presentation?
Yeah, well, I think there's, I'd like to see options, I think, so that if you have a process that can use a lot of variety of feedstocks and still produce a consistent product, you know, maybe that you would choose the product testing option. Whereas if you have something that's basically a waste product, like this high carbon ash, and so the machinery was not built to produce biochar, it was built to produce energy, yet you have this useful byproduct, maybe the process certification would work better in that instance. So I think we need a lot of flexibility. You know, you're right about that. Anybody else?
Yes, sir.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's really, those are retail products. And there are wholesalers as well. So I was mainly... Well, I think that need to be better intersections between the bioenergy industry and biochar and agriculture, because that's how you capture the full value of biochar, is if it is made as a byproduct of energy. So, and it's happening with this high carbon ash, but as bioenergy production ramps up in the world and new processes are designed, I don't know how to get plant designers to include biochar. You know, so we've been talking a lot about focusing a lot on markets to increase the demand, but we also have to work on the production and integrating that with bioenergy as well to make it all economical. It's a tough problem.
You are reliving the argument for the last 3 years. Should we be using crops on land, biofuel on land? And if we do take that land out, are we going to be able to put that in our mouths?
Thank you.